Well, last talk, good afternoon. I've worked primarily with Kevin Morris to kind of pull together some information here, and I think the first thing is I really wanted to go back and talk a little bit how we got here. And I want to go back to the late 90s, and some of you that were at universities at that time, you remember that we were getting the annual request from Kevin to write a letter to support NTEP, because at that time the U.S. Department of Agriculture wanted to kick Kevin out of Beltsville and they wanted to end the program, and he was only getting $50,000 of in-kind support. There actually wasn't any financial support at that time. We went through that for about 3 years with a letter writing campaign, and Bob Sherman was with NTEP at that time, and he thought that what we really needed to do was there wasn't a culture of USDA ARS scientists at that time back at Beltsville. Jack Murray had been gone for quite a few years, so we thought it was time that maybe we request to have that position replaced. So a group of us that were on the NTEP policy committee at that time went and made a presentation to the national program staff for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and essentially they took it from one position and they told us what we really needed to work on was a national turfgrass research initiative. And So in early 2000, we actually had a very large meeting in Dallas, Texas. There were probably close to 250 participants. They brought in ARS staff from around the country, primarily forage, pasture management folks, a lot of turfgrass scientists from the universities, and then a good representation from the entire turfgrass industry. And what we did is we mapped out the National Turfgrass Research Initiative, which was a really large program. And then I'll talk a little bit about that, and then the last thing I'll finish up is with Specialty Crop Research Initiative and how that kind of got started. So the National Turfgrass Research Initiative, there's probably a lot of you don't realize that we have one. We actually put this all together with national program staff. They helped us with what they thought this would cost. They said, go up to Congress and let's ask for $32.4 million, which, you know, to me, that was a huge amount of money. And you can see some of the strategies that we have there. I have it kind of small, but improvement of water management, collection, enhanced the preservation of turfgrass germplasm, improvement of pest management practices, understanding the improvement of turfgrass's role in the environment, enhancement of soil and soil management practices, and then the development of the integrated turfgrass management systems. And it's kind of started out within NTEP. I think there was, it's really kind of interesting, at that time, the National Turfgrass Evaluation Program was an activity of the National Turfgrass Federation. But really, it was kind of like the tail wagging the dog at that point. So we really needed, because of the some of the lobbying effort and going to the Hill and asking for funds, we decided to split those organizations. And so the National Turfgrass Federation kind of took this on, and then NTEP just continued with the evaluation program, which was really the main thrust of the National Turfgrass Federation at that time. And so this is where we started going to House and Senate members, mainly talking to their staff. We had a team of people from turfgrass industry. We always had people from the sod producers, the golf course superintendents, sports turf management, and it was a pretty good group. We usually had anywhere from 6 to 8 industry people that came in, and we would visit with staff. And what our goal was to start getting some of these initiatives funded. No sooner that we had the ink dry on the National Turfgrass Research Initiative, sometime it was probably like about May or so that year, we had 9/11. And, you know, all of a sudden there was just a whole change as far as, you know, what we could accomplish. So that was the first thing that kind of, we tried to get this going, and then we had the September 9/11, and that really kind of set us back a bit. Let's go forward. Okay, what we continue to do, or what the general plan was that we wanted to add ARS scientists to all of their locations. And they have basically more than 100 locations in the United States. And what we did, working with national program staff, is that we went into every state and we would say, oh, hey, we have a land-grant university there. They have a good turf grass management program. They don't have a breeder. Maybe they had an entomologist, but they didn't have a pathologist. So that would kind of identify that if there was an ARS lab close by, that if they didn't have a pathologist, maybe we would try to get an ARS person in pathology to work there. And so we went around the country, we came up with this. But if we put an ARS scientist in there, what we wanted them to do, if we got those federal appropriated funds for $450,000, about $300,000 would go towards the ARS scientist, and $150,000 would be there for collaboration with the land-grant university in that location. So that was kind of the approach that we took. And we were getting a lot of coaching from national program staff on how to do that. And so in time, you know, where we were at that particular time is, you know, they came and they said, well, we're doing a lot of turf grass research. And they listed all the stations around the country. And the ones that I've highlighted in yellow, you know, Logan, Utah, Beltsville, Maryland, Tifton, Georgia. We had some work in Minnesota and Columbus, Ohio on runoff issues. And then there was some soils work at Beaver, West Virginia. This was kind of the where we knew there were some things going on. But they listed a lot of stations that we didn't know what, I mean, maybe they were working a little bit in turf, but it wasn't very significant at that time. Okay, so from that, it kind of, working with national program staff, now that we were kind of talking about having a program, they had to put it someplace. Well, so where was the best place to put us? And at that particular time, they put us with the other kind of grass people for the most part, and that was the Rangeland Pasture and Forage Group. They actually had a component in their 5-year plan to have sustainable turf grass systems, and the only objective that they put in this particular one was the need to improve germplasm that is adapted to biotic and abiotic stresses and meets the economic and environmental objectives of turf producers and users. Now, the fate and transport of pesticides, and that was in the water quality one. So we did have a few things written into the water quality, but this was really the main thrust at that particular time. The other thing too, in order for Congress to appropriate money, there's got to be something in the Farm Bill that allows them to do that. So the Turfgrass Research Initiative, we actually got some language in there. It was to do research and extension grants. May be made under this section to study the production of turf grass, including the use of water, fertilizer, pesticides, fossil fuels, machinery, turf establishment and maintenance, environmental protection and enhancement relating to turf grass production. So we really had all of this was coming together. Now, why this is all coming together, you got to remember there were other things that were happening. Okay, now we have the Iraq War in 2004, then we had Katrina, and as we're going up there and we're asking for money, you know, there's all these other issues going on in the country. And then the other thing, too, is that the word called earmark, because that was really what we're trying to do. We're working with particular congressmen and senators. We're saying, hey, we have a need for an entomologist at this particular location, or we have a need for maybe some more breeding work at this location or drought tolerance work. And so we'd really like to put one in your district. Well, that's kind of how it was working. Well, but earmarks were becoming a really bad name. But these were the kind of earmarks that we were putting in. And we actually, in 2008, in the president's budget, we had $1 million appropriated by the House to work on drought mitigation. We were going to split that between Riverside and Phoenix, Arizona. This is just an example of how we were trying to build this program. The Senate, on the other hand, had a little bit of difference. They wanted to split it up three ways, some to Riverside, some to Arizona. There was, I think, a congressperson, House member, that wanted to get some money to Akron, Colorado, to one of their stations there. We already were trying to get some money to Logan, Utah. I still think we have some of that there. Out of the blue, Senator Byrd's staff, when he was still alive, he wrote in for West Virginia. He wanted $300,000 to go to the Beaver, West Virginia, which I've been there a couple of times, and it's hard to find. And then we had we actually got Scott Warnke's position. We had got that early on. That was in the budget. We had a little bit more money for Logan, Utah, and additional funding for Beaver. These were, you know, different things that we were working on, and things were going along. Well, two things happened. One, we had the economic recession. The other thing is we had an election, and that just changed everything. All bets were off. No budget, no farm bill. Matter of fact, it took a couple more years to get the farm bill through. So anyway, That was kind of where we were at in 2008. Well, we were a little bit disappointed. We kind of went a little bit different direction. We started working a little bit with Irrigation Association and some others on the water sense stuff. That kind of was coming up. But one of the things that was brought to our attention, and it was Kirk Hunter and the Turfgrass Producers International, they were trying to get these marketing grants that were appropriate. It was a $100,000 grant that helped a particular commodity market their products, but it was just for specialty crops. And what we started finding out is that we weren't considered a specialty crop. And in some ways, when you go compete with the cereal crops, we're not really considered, you know, like an agronomic crop, like corn, soybeans, and that sort of thing. So I'm not going to say the word, but that's kind of how we felt. I mean, we just were kind of in between, and we didn't really have some place to go. And I can't remember the lobbyist that helped us with this, but he basically said, well, you got to go in and get a rule change. And so as the specialty crops was coming on, we were trying to get involved in this, and this was early in 2004, and we weren't having much success, because in a way, I mean, here we are, the tri-society meetings, agronomy, crop soil science, we're in the range pasture forage, which is, you know, more, you know, kind of this crop science area, yet now we want to get funding from the landscape management, horticulture science, and kind of this, you know, on the theme of recreation and environmental benefits that turfgrass provides. So this was kind of a something that we worked on, and the way they did this is they went in, and I mean, it's unbelievable how many rules. I guess this is partly in the Office of Budget and Management that they decide, you know, what the rules are going to be and who gets what and how things are defined. So. And I think this is a growing document because it's got over 13,000 pages. There's probably more pages now. But on page 13,314, it defines specialty crops. and this was just a little thing that we changed. It said, for the purpose of this rule, means fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, dried nuts, horticulture and nursery crops, including floriculture. And then this is the key one. The inclusion of horticulture means turfgrass sod is a covered commodity. Now, we've taken a little bit more latitude with that. It really was originally for the, you know, for turfgrass sod, the sod producers, and they did get some of these $100,000 marketing grants to help them with different messages that they wanted to get the homeowner. But the main thing was is that we finally had some place in the docket that said turfgrass is a specialty crop. Well, that gets us to where you guys are. You know, a lot of you, I think I mentioned that you applied in 2009, in 2010, you were applying for these. And I was encouraging scientists that the USGA was supporting to apply for these grants, but you weren't getting anywhere. And it was kind of frustrating because here we were trying to work with the USDA, and one of the differences here is now we're not working with ARS now. Now we're switched over and we're working with NEPA, and we were trying to get them to support this. And I remember visiting, I think Kevin set up the meeting, and we met face-to-face with Dr. Buick, who runs the program, and we just said, look, we're underserved. These guys are the best scientists that we know of. They're submitting proposals to you, and they're ending up in the round file. They're not even being really looked at. Well, heck, the next year we got one. So, you know, I think we complained to the right person, and so that was at least a victory at that point in time. I think that was the warm season grass breeding one that came through at that time. So we were encouraging scientists to apply, but I think what's even more important, as an industry group, we were going to talking to the NEPA staff annually to discuss the importance of the turfgrass industry, the kinds of things that we were interested in. Another thing that we started doing is, we started emphasizing that you had to have an industry group. There were a lot of us that were willing to serve on those groups. And not just serve, but actually attend, be able to talk about it, because I could go and talk to Tom Buick now and say, hey, look, I've been to the meetings, I know what's going on, this is a good project. It kind of gives them some feedback that you're on the right track and you're doing things that are going to help the turf industry. But this last go-around, I served on one that was it was kind of a nursery production one, and it was very frustrating because the turfgrass proposals, I thought, were pretty good, and there were five or six others. And one of the things that was frustrating about it is the turf ones were way down on the they were way down. They were so low they weren't even going to be recommended to have a scientific panel review because all the other industry people were in nursery production, floriculture, and that sort of thing. They don't care about turf, so they didn't rate the proposals that high. So this last go-around, we had an industry panel that was made up of turfgrass industry representatives, and so that they were the ones that that selected some projects to move forward. And I think there were only about six in that. That's what I understand. There were six, and then I think three of those were moved forward. So the point of all this is that we do have an industry panel. They're actually calling us up, and they want us to help find members from industry that will serve on this panel. And that's just the first step. That just moves your project from, is it important to the industry? Then it goes into the scientific review. Okay, I want to deviate a little bit because I was working on something, and I'm doing this a little bit backwards, but what I have here is, along the y-axis there is thousands of dollars. So the top part would be $2.5 million. I don't have response variables. I just have money, but that's okay. I feel like Donald Trump all of a sudden. No. Anyway, if you look at the x-axis, that's the decades. And what I did was I took the amount of money that the USGA has given out from 1920 to the 2010s, and I averaged the amount the average amount per year for that decade. And then I just kept on moving along throughout the decades. And then the other thing that I did was I put all the dollars in 2015 dollars. So, you're not looking at the fact that a dollar, today's dollar is worth about $20 back in 1920, but it's all on the same basis. Okay, and the reason why I did this was we were just talking about things that maybe the USGA could do, and one of the things that we talked about is, I wonder if the USGA paid the tri-societies some number so that all of the turfgrass publications were available. So you didn't have to be necessarily a member. Well, after I found out that was going to be, I think it was like $650,000 or $800,000, we didn't think we were going to do that. But anyway, these are the average number of publications, scientific publications on turfgrass published in the tri-societies. It also includes ITS that have been published by decade since 1920. And the reason why I kind of did this backwards is when I looked at this, I thought, oh, look at 1980. It went up a little bit. But 1990 and then the 2000s, and I thought, well, that kind of follows the way the USGA's been funding. And the thing that also got me was when you get to the this last decade, 2010s, it drops off because of, I think, we all went through this economic recession. The USGA couldn't provide as much funding. Golf course superintendents, TPI, all of these organizations. And it really, what struck me was is that, if you're going to get turfgrass science done, you need money. And if you don't have money, it's not going to get done. And I've taken this message several times to people I kind of take this approach that, look, we got this started. The USGA got this started back in the 1920s, and we stayed with it for the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s. After World War II, Fred Grau, who came back to work for the USGA and had been a USDA employee, he decided to, when he became the research director, he decided that he wanted to internalize the green section because he saw the growth in the land-grant universities. He saw the graduate students that were going to be starting to go. There were professors, there were programs, there was education. And so from the 50s to the 70s, you kind of had this growth where I think it was mainly federal and state funding. They were hiring people and the money was there. But then what happened in the 1980s? It started to drop off, or the budgets became flat. And that's about the time the USGA started kicking in some funding, and all of a sudden things started to grow again. But as soon as golf and the economy went down, all of a sudden the scientific publications are going to go down. And this is, golf only represents about maybe 3 to 5% of the turfgrass industry. And this is just a little impact that we've had. Well, imagine if the federal government, rather than the turfgrass industry being underserved, wonder if the federal government actually put some things in there. We'd have solutions to the drought problems in California and all these different places. So the SER program, SERI program, it's coming in at the perfect time. And my industry perception is this isn't just one sector of the industry that has to solve the problem. This is a problem that should be solved by by our federal government. So industry perspective, there's a vital need for federal support of turfgrass science and management. It's absolute. I mean, you can see in some areas, when you're competing with a city that's willing to pay people $4 a square foot to remove their lawn, what do you think is going to happen? Nonprofit associations, the USGA, GCSA, TPI, we don't have the financial funds to support the research that needs to be done. So I think it's something that we keep on going to House and Senate members and telling them this, that we need USDA programs. We like the Specialty Crop Research Initiative. I haven't given up on ARS programs, but I figured the way that I could get ARS going is that rather than begging some congressman or senator to do something, I'm going to go to the ARS library or laboratory and I'm going to write them a check. And I'm going to get them to hire a postdoc or to work on something that we want specifically done. I think that's at least get them going so that they can do some work. And then the last one, USDA programs, they need to evaluate the importance of the turfgrass industry and provide internal and external funding. When I think of internal funding, that's for ARS scientists. The external funding would be something like the specialty crop. Because after all, you've seen it several times today, we have 50,000 acres. You know, we deserve a little bit more support from the government than what I think we're getting right now. And so that, I think, is what I have. I thank you for your support, because I look at your support, you're the ones that have to write these proposals. You know, our funding rate now is only about 20-25%. I don't know what SCRI is, but it's much lower than that. But I appreciate the fact that, you know, if we ask you to write a proposal and get together and try to do something, it's great that you do that, and we'll continue on our end to try to get more funding for some of these SCRI projects and other potential projects. With that, I'll end. Thank you.